If you enjoy this episode of The Feel Good Factor, you are going to totally enjoy my free newsletter, The Feel Good Tribe. Go to my website, veganosaurus.com, veganosaurus.com/newsletter and sign up. Once you sign up, you will get a confirmation email. You have to hit confirm on that email. That's the only way you will be subscribed. If the email isn't in your inbox, then it's likely in your spam folder or your promotions folder. Please check there. Mark it as not spam and then hit confirm. As soon as you've confirmed and you're on the list, you're going to get a welcome email. Go through the email, hit reply immediately and tell me all about yourself. I am waiting to hear back from you. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Feel Good Factor. I'm Susmita Veganosaurus and I'm so glad you could join me here today. It's finally time to tell you all about my trip to Dharamkot, Himachal Pradesh. This was a hybrid solo trip. So when I say hybrid, I went there by myself, but the trip was planned along with my friend Ekta. Ekta runs Purnatvam, that is her brand. She is a yoga teacher. So it all started because I read this really cute series of books called The Dalai Lama's Cat by David Michie. And Ekta loves cats. So after I read the book, I kept recommending it to her. And then she started reading it too. And the book is set at McLeod Ganj in Dharamshala, Dharamkot, near that area. So both of us were like, oh, we should visit there sometime. It'll be so much fun. And, you know, we'll do a trip together there. So finally, when we did start planning the trip, we looked online at the kinds of different things we could do. And we saw that the Dharamkot area would be much better than staying at McLeod Ganj, which is a bit noisy and populated. Whereas Dharamkot is kind of quiet and nice. And it's about 45 minutes walk away from McLeod Ganj. So we decided to stay up there at Dharamkot and we looked up a couple of art studios and other things that we could do. Very loosely and casually planned our trip, found a place to stay. I went there from Bangalore and Ekta came there from Rishikesh. She came a day later and she left a couple of days earlier. We both had our own rooms and we decided to do some things together and some things on our own, and that's why it's a hybrid solo trip. I had a lot of time to be by myself, go out, explore, meet people, but I also had a lot of time with her, you know, just enjoying her company, and both of us went out to eat, we attended some workshops together, meditation, some walks. So it was a very beautiful amalgamation of enjoying time with my own self as well as with a very, very dear friend. So today's episode, I wanted to talk to you about some of the lessons that I learned on this solo trip. I would say some of these are new lessons and others were reminders, you know, things I already kind of knew. But maybe I needed to experience them to be reminded that, this is true, and validate these thoughts that I had in my head. Let's get right down to it. The first lesson. Before you go on any trip, plan. Plan and prepare. But also, don't overplan and overprepare. So planning with a lot of room to go with the flow when you reach the place is a beautiful way to do a trip. This way, you know where you want to stay, what you want to do, a little bit of that, and make a few key decisions, especially deciding on the location, and have a general timetable, because we have a limited number of days, so general timetable of the things we want to do. So that is where the planning and preparation comes, booking certain things in advance so we don't miss out on them and stuff. And then going with the flow is more about getting there and then leaving a lot of free time to decide what to do depending on once you explore, what do you discover? And then what do you hear other people tell you? Or even the weather, which is the most unpredictable thing, right? It rained a lot through most of our stay at Dharamkot. So a lot of our plans change according to that. So being open to going with the flow instead of making a very strict schedule, like a timetable beforehand, that helps a lot and you're able to experience things a lot better. So that was the first lesson, planning, preparation, while also leaving a lot of room to go with the flow. A loosely planned vacation. Lesson number two is always stay at a place that you're going to be comfortable at. This sounds obvious, but a lot of people don't take this into consideration. They think, okay, I want to be close to this particular area or I want to not spend too much money on my stay because I'm going to be roaming around all day anyway. These are the thoughts which a lot of people commonly have. But it's extremely important to have a room, a space where you can be relaxed, you can withdraw into and be very comfortable. That's what's going to refresh you and give you the energy to then take anything that comes on the trip in your stride. If plans change, if it's raining cats and dogs, if things are like that, you are able to easily accept that because you can just retreat into your room and it's going to be nice. It's going to be nice for you. I stayed at this place called The Unmad. I hadn't heard of them before, but I found out about them through this pottery studio, the Dharamkot studio people. I'd asked them, where can I stay, which is kind of close to you. And they suggested The Unmad to me and I'm so grateful they did. The room was just right for me. It was big enough to accommodate me, all my stuff, and, move around freely. It had a cozy bed, not one of those spring mattresses that all these resorts and hotels have, but a nice mattress, which is just the right balance of firmness and softness. They had thick blankets. And for that weather, they provided things like a hot water pack and a hot water kettle. A boiler in the room so that we can turn off and on the hot water whenever we want, for our bath. So there were a lot of facilities this way in the room. And the beauty is that they also did room service at no extra charge from their in-house cafe. So on the days that it was too rainy and I was feeling too lazy to get out of bed and go out, I could easily order food into the room and just eat there. Now, there are rooms for a lot cheaper available in that area and people do take those. And this room wasn't expensive either. It was a mid-range price. But I'm very, very content that I decided to pay that price because it was worth every single paisa that I paid for the room. So yeah, here's a little shout out to The Unmad. And if any of you ever visit the Dharamkot, Himachal Pradesh area, then stay with them. Then the next lesson is location. Location is so important. Based on what you're looking for, you decide where you need to stay. Don't compromise on this aspect. My dad told me that there's this resort. He felt that because I'd be traveling solo and staying there alone a lot of the time, he felt that it's going to be safer for me to be inside that resort. But the thing is, the resort was located like 2 hours away from the from all the activities that I wanted to do, all the things that I wanted to experience. So I said, no, I don't want to stay there. It could have been very easy for me to go there and stay there, but then that would have meant nothing. I could have gone and stayed at a resort at any place in India. Why go so far away to the mountains to experience the real life there? if I had to go stay again, you know, enclosed in a little bubble inside a resort. And that was a great decision. And thanks to Ekta, Dharamkot was our choice because she showed me a few websites. So one was the Dharamkot Studio, where we both took pottery lessons. It was also close to these other cafes and eateries and things like that. And away from all the noise and the crowd so that we could be really peaceful. The place we stayed at was about 20 minutes walk away from the noisy places. So not too far away. And then we just get back to our room and be quiet whenever we want to and go out into the crowd whenever we want to. Like when we wanted to experience the liveliness of people and music and crowds, we could always get that. But we always had a place to just withdraw into. We were able to walk to every place. There was only one time that we had to take a vehicle, and that was on our visit to McLeodganj. Even there, we walked there, and then on the way back uphill, we took an auto, only because we were short of time. Otherwise, that's also a walkable place if you're in the mood to walk. So location is key, and you have to decide. This is where lesson one comes into play. You plan and prepare and kind of have a general idea of what you want to do at a place. And that's going to help you choose the right location for it so that you don't have to travel too much and worry about being dependent on, transportation being available. The next lesson, get your own space. It's nice to travel with friends, with a group. It's lovely to do that. But if your trip is going to be just maybe 2 days, 3 days, that's all fine. You know, you can all stay together, share rooms and things like that. But if your trip is going to be many days, like mine was 10 days long, then it's very important to have your own space. We all are different, you know, all of us are different kinds of people, all of us have different energy, different habits, different behaviors. We can't get along all the time. And why do you want to add any unpleasantness to your trip at all, right? Where instead of enjoying the time you have together, if you're like, oh no, we have to stay, I have to live with this person, then I have to deal with their habits. And I don't even mean like bad habits and stuff like that. I mean things like Ekta is a morning person. She wakes up at like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. Even in that cold, she is a yoga teacher. That is her lifestyle. And she gets up, she gets ready, has a bath, goes out. And I stay in bed till 9 o'clock minimum. So it wouldn't have been suitable at all for us to be staying together in the same room. Even though it would have saved us money, right? Because we'd be paying nearly half of what we paid for accommodation. It would have taken away from other things. Now, throughout the day, whenever I wanted silence, I'd just retreat to my room. Whenever she wanted silence, she'd just go off into her room. You know, we do our own things. We both meditate and we do a bunch of different things, which are similar also, but things which you'd like to do alone, you know, reading quietly and all that stuff. And we got to do all of that. And then whenever we felt like it, we'd message each other or call each other and we'd be like, okay, shall we go here? Shall we go for lunch? Shall we do this? Shall we do that? And then we'd go out together. Having that own space really helped us get along better despite our different points of view, our differences in personalities, all of it. So far, all these lessons are things which are reminders for me. You know, I kind of already knew it and that's why I planned the trip that way. But this next lesson was a surprise to me. It was really something I truly, truly learned. Sometimes India can be a lot better place to travel solo at than anywhere in, say, Europe or another country. I know it sounds surprising, right? Because there are so many facilities, conveniences, better developed roads and pathways and stuff like that abroad. Yes, you know, in other countries. But here's where India is so special. No matter where you go, whether it's a place of stay or whether it's somewhere where the taxi driver is taking you, wherever it is, people are a lot more helpful. The nature of being in service is a lot stronger, I've seen, in India than in other places. For example, a few years ago, I had done a solo trip to Italy. And there, almost everywhere, you know, whichever location I stayed at, I had to lug my own suitcases and stuff upstairs or down the road. People wouldn't really be bothered to help. I mean, I'm not talking about strangers, but I mean the people of, say, the hotel that I stayed at, or the cab driver who dropped me from one place, like, say, to the airport or something like that. Nobody was helpful. Nobody even gave it a second thought that, okay, there's a person here who's alone, who has this heavy luggage, especially on the return journey, and, you know, we need to help them. We need to extend a little bit more in our service than just dropping them from one location to another, or checking them into the hotel and giving them the room key. Whereas in Dharamkot, right from the moment I landed at the airport, from the taxi driver who immediately took my suitcases and put them in the trunk, to the guys at the stay place who came down the stairs to take all my luggage and carry it up to the room. As wonderful as this place is, the Unmad, the Unmad, it's pronounced in two ways. Unmad is a Sanskrit term, and the Unmad is the Englishified version. The words are not a translation of each other. But yeah, so it's called the Unmad or the Unmad. So Unmad is a place which has a lot of stairs. You have to go up and down a lot of stairs to even reach the basic reception check-in cafe level. So that's 74 steps. I counted them. 74, not even like very small steps, slightly higher cement stone type steps. You have to lug yourself up all of those to even check in or to reach that level, you know, of entering the stay place. And then plus I had another 30 plus steps to go up to reach my room. So that's a lot of stairs, lot of walking. And it's very difficult to carry things. See, if you're fit, if you're strong, if you're able-bodied and all that, you can climb up the stairs. That's not a problem. And in fact, the longer you stay there, over days you get very used to it. But you can't lug things up. You know, it's not easy to carry luggage up. And it's not like I packed a lot. It was not very heavy luggage either. But even so, it was not easy. It would not have been easy for me to carry it up. But as a part of their service itself, they say, like, right before you even book the rooms, it says, okay, you have so many steps. So you will have to climb these steps to reach your rooms. But our team members will help you carry the luggage upstairs. You know, it's promised beforehand. You know, even with the, like I said, the taxi driver, as soon as he dropped me at the place, he got up and took the luggage out of the car and then handed it to the Unmad guys. And they came and they took it to the room. You have this feeling of being treated very royally with these simple gestures of this kind. You feel like you're receiving royal treatment. So this is something that really hit me when it came to the difference, the stark difference between my travel in Italy and my travel in India. And it's a very big deal, especially when you're solo. You feel a bit, sometimes, you know, after a certain point, you feel a bit lost or lonely. You're wondering what to do. And then people being helpful, you know, having this nature of service, that makes you feel at home. That makes you feel confident to go anywhere alone and to be in that place, in those areas alone. So that was really nice. And overall also, in Dharamkot, I saw that people were generally quite helpful and, you know, friendly and welcoming of tourists there. So that was a very nice feeling. The next lesson, which was very important for me, was to realize that first impressions aren't the whole picture. Now, here's what happens. As a woman who's traveling, you're very tuned to danger. You know, your instinct for unsafe people and situations is very high and very sharp. So you have a tendency to kind of stay away from men, especially who may seem a little loud or, you know, seem to be smoking somewhere or maybe a little drunk and things like that. And yes, all this is good. We definitely need to keep ourselves safe and everything. But I also learned on this trip that first impressions aren't everything. So here's what happened. At the end of every evening, we would all go down, a group of us, a lot of the guests, we'd go down to the cafe and just sit around there and chat. It was a lovely ritual, you know, the way we ended our day talking into the night, and then we'd all go off to our rooms to go to sleep. So it was really nice exchanging different things that happened through the day, or even talking about various interesting topics. And it was just lovely. That ritual was so close to my heart. There was this one guy who, there are multiple tables, so people would sit in different groups. And this man was sitting with others initially when I had seen him, not with our gang. But there were some overlaps, like people from our table would also know people from their table and things like that. So sometimes people would switch around and we'd all sit with each other and stuff. And this guy seemed a bit rowdy-ish to me, a little loud, a little kind of rough, and someone whom I felt like, okay, I don't really want to spend time talking to this person because we'd probably not have anything in common. I'd seen him outside smoking a few times, and I'm not saying smokers are bad or anything like that, but just that very big difference in the way we are, you know, just by that itself is a huge difference. I had all these preconceived notions. So the first impression, or the first few words he has said, the first few sentences he said, also when we were all at the same table, it didn't really appeal to me or impress me. It felt off to me. I didn't really like a lot of what he said, but I'm like, okay, I don't have to interact much with this guy. But it just so happened that we all, a couple of days in a row, we kind of sat at the same table, and then we started chatting more and more, all of us. And then I realized that, you know, every person is like an onion. That first impression, it's not that it's untrue, but it's only one layer. As you get to know a person, as you keep spending more time with the person, you will see that you have other things in common. And even if you don't have things in common, you will find what they say interesting and fun, especially because they are not the same as you, especially because their life experiences have been so extremely different from your own life experiences that it's actually interesting and entertaining and fun. And then you can share your thoughts, your perspectives on each other's experiences with each other. By the end of the trip, of course, you know, my preconceived notions were gone, and I did enjoy the conversations that we all had as a group. And it was a nice reminder for me that don't just believe in first impressions. Yes, trust your instincts, especially when it comes to safety and things, and protecting your energy. Trust your instincts, but also give people a chance, a little bit more chance. You know, just see what they're going to be like. Get to know people a little better with curiosity and openness and an open mind, right? Just get to know them, and you never know the kind of interesting things that you'll get to experience through their stories. Yeah, this was a good lesson for me. And of course, this is just one example of a person, but this happened to me multiple times. So many, many first impressions of either kind that switched for me. As I got to know people more, I felt that I liked them more, you know, or I realized that, no, I don't want to spend this much time with this person anymore. So it was very interesting and a good reminder for my life overall. don't make too many plans and overbook your time. This kind of ties into lesson one, but it's so important not to have FOMO. You know, just don't have FOMO. There is a lot to do in every place you go to. There's a lot to see in every place you visit. And there is no way ever that you're going to be able to do it in that short span of time that you're visiting a place. So don't let FOMO overcome you. Yes, it's good to have desires and interests and this idea of, okay, I want to see this place, I want to do this thing. But if you have too much planned out, too many things on the cards, or even just too many desires, like I want to see this, I want to do that, I want to be there. Unfortunately, whatever you do end up experiencing ends up being shallow because your mind is everywhere else. Right when you're in the midst of one activity, you're already thinking of, okay, tomorrow I'm going to go there, do this, or I want to do this. Or worse, you're going to be like, oh no, it's the end of the trip and I only got to do so many things. So you're not in the moment, you're not present, and you're not experiencing whatever it is you're experiencing right then. So you don't get the full benefit of it, the full joy and fulfillment out of it. So don't have too many desires. Just say whatever happens, okay. Whatever works out, okay. I have some 2-3, you know, keep lesser interests in your on the cards. I want to do 2-3 things. I want to eat at these 2-3 places. I want to visit this one other thing. And then let it flow. You know, beyond that, don't pile things up. And that also gives you the freedom to decide, instead of thinking, okay, I have to do this today and get it out of the way. If you feel like doing something else instead, if something else is calling to you, you have the full freedom to go and do it, because there is no fear of, okay, if I miss it out today, I won't get to do it. Okay, you don't get to do it means you don't get to do it. That's it. Keep yourself very flexible. Just enjoy the joy of missing out instead of living in the fear of missing out. Then stay off social media. So I deleted Instagram from my phone for the entire duration of my trip. I actually did it a few days before I left, and I came back to Instagram slowly, aram se, many days after I returned back to Bangalore. It really freed my mind. It gave me more time. Now, I've done this entire episode of what a difference life is when you get off social media, take that break for a month or two, or, you know, long stretches of time. And you can listen to all about that on episode 72 of the podcast. It's all about how my Instagram breaks changed my life, you know, the way it changed my perspective on everything. So I won't go into detail about that here. You can listen to it there if you'd like to know more about it. But being off Instagram helped me in two key ways on this trip. One is it saved me time. Because yes, you touch a social media channel of any kind. It's not necessarily only Instagram. It could be WhatsApp. It could be Facebook, wherever you are, TikTok. You touch it and then you're down the rabbit hole. You've lost yourself. You've lost the time. If you're going to lose yourself on Instagram, why are you even going to any place, traveling so far and, you know, putting all the effort to be somewhere else just so that you can go and sit on Instagram there? Right? You can just spend your time staring at your mobile phone the whole time. Even if it's an hour a day, it's still a lot. That's precious time that you could spend just being present and enjoying what is actually around you in real life. That's one way it helped me. Two, when I was taking pictures, or when I was deciding if I should take a video clip or whether I should just watch something, I didn't do it from the point of view of Instagram. Now, I have a lot of Insta-worthy photographs and videos. I managed to grab those, but I didn't do it for Instagram. And that's the difference. And there's so much more that I saw and enjoyed, which I didn't even bother to capture. Like, there were long stretches of time where my phone was just in my pocket or in my bag and forgotten entirely. I was just completely where I was in that moment. And that was very, very beautiful. So, consider this. The next time you're on a trip, delete social media apps from your phone completely and just disappear. Disappear from social media. See the world of difference it's going to make for you. Of course, not staring at my phone also helped me have more meaningful conversations and interactions with people around me, because I wasn't distracted, you know, with notifications or these things that I need to catch up online. I wasn't distracted by any of it. So I was fully present in the moment. You know, that also added so much more meaning and so much more beauty to my entire trip, just having those conversations. So that again is something that helps when you stay off your phone and stay off social media. Do things on your trip that you can only do locally and nowhere else. You know, offbeat, very local stuff. Visit the kind of places which you may not be able to visit anywhere else. Do the kind of activities that are not so accessible anywhere else. Be true to that place you're at. Don't try to go and look at only all these touristic crowded locations. Don't try to say, okay, all these touristic things are there. These are all the places that other people have posted about. I'll go do this. Instead, you discover what is unique and what is quiet, even if it's not popular, right? That's the important part. Even if it's not popular, if it is unique to that particular place, if it is quiet, then enjoy it, experience it. On my last day of the trip, I decided to go hike uphill. I'd been hearing about this place called the Sunset Cafe that everybody was telling me. And they're like, okay, this is in Gullu and there's a beautiful sunset there and you have a nice walk. You can hike uphill, trek there and all that. So I just decided on a whim. You know, it was my very last day there, last evening. The weather was nice. It was not raining. And somehow I felt, okay, let me just do this. I feel like doing this now. So I just got out of the room and started walking upwards. And by then, my friend had also left. So there was no one to coordinate with. Nothing. I just went on my own. And on my way up, I met a couple of Buddhist monks. And it was kind of nice. It was like, you know, angels had sent them. So initially, when you start hiking upwards, it's just stairs. You know, you're just going up the steps. And then suddenly the steps end and it's all like just rocks and rickety places. And then you have to somehow manage to climb up. And I was like, am I lost? Can I do this? Can people even go up here? I was feeling so clueless. And thankfully, because of these two Buddhist monks, you know, my journey became nicer. They were also new there. They were from Nepal and they were visiting here to visit the Dalai Lama for one of his talks. And they wanted to discover the place. And so they were also hiking up the hill just like that. And they had stopped on the way to talk to this tea seller. And he had told them, yes, you keep going up this way. This is the direction, all that. I'd taken directions from him. And I had watched them talk to someone. And I was just waiting at this one spot where, you know, the steps ended. And then I'd gone up a few rocks. And I'm like, okay, am I even in the right direction? I saw them in the distance and I was waiting and watching. What are they going to do? I watched them talk to that guy and I could see him pointing from the distance, you know, some different places. Okay, this is a route and all that. I understood. And then these two monks, they came up to where I was. And then I said, oh, is this the way to Gullu? They said, yes. And they were very sweet. They said that they're used to all these mountainous pathways and trekking up all these areas where there is nothing to trek up, you know, in the sense of there is no actual path. You just make your own path and go up the rocks. So they are very used to it, they said. And they took a lot of care, you know, while I was going up, they were telling me, okay, come this side, move to this side, it's safer. And, you know, we were all taking breaks, breathing. It was not like they were super fit or anything like that. We all kind of had the same fitness level, except I have to admit one of them was quite old. And at his age, he seemed to be as fit as I am, which is like a very normal average level of fitness. I walked up with them, you know, I walked up that track with them, and then I finally reached Kalu, and then there was a point where we parted ways, and they went downhill and then I went further uphill. So it was a very fun experience getting to know these strangers, getting to know the terrain. It was very quiet. We barely saw any other people on the way. You know, I really would have been lost if I was on my own on the way up. And then after I reached Kalu, I knew there was a temple. So I stopped there for a while and took in the scenery. And, you know, I could finally see in the distance some snow-capped mountains and everything. By the way, I'm going to be sharing photographs from my trip when I do the blog post for this episode. So it's going to be up on my website maybe next week or the week after. I'm working on that part slowly, but just letting you know. so you'll be able to see some of the photographs of all these beautiful, lush, scenic places. So anyway, I went to the temple first, stayed there for a while. Then I asked someone, okay, how do I go to Sunset Cafe? Because that's the one everybody had been talking about. First, somebody gave me some directions and I walked, got a little lost. Somebody else gave me directions. And then finally, you know, there's this little pathway. It's like a little track in the middle of the forest next to some tiny waterfall streams and stuff. You don't even realize there's a path there. Unless somebody tells you, you won't even know that this is the direction to go. It was fun, and it was a little scary going there on my own too, but it was fun, you know. It was that excitement was there, that adventure and excitement. And when I went up the pathway, at this one point, I saw this place called the Sundowner Cafe. It's this tiny little shop where the guy has this kitchen. And then next to it, there's two, three seats, you know, just like this one long seater and then two, three seats. And then outside a few more seats. And it was so beautiful. It's a cute little place. And the scene from there, the views from there were absolutely beautiful. And I just sat down there, and initially there were two people in the cafe, and then they also left. And I was wondering, I'm like, is this Sundowner Cafe the actual name of the place and everybody else is calling it Sunset Cafe? I was wondering that, and I was like, oh, this place is so famous, how come there's no one here? But anyway, I enjoyed the views peacefully after my long walk up the hill. It was very nice to sit there. I ordered some mint tea and drank it, and then I asked the guy to click some pictures of me looking out the window. And so inside, outside, I really enjoyed my time there. And then I told him, I said, oh, everyone says Sunset Cafe, yours is called Sundowner. And he said, oh yeah, that's, you know, Sunset Cafe is further up. It's about, it's only about 200 feet or so away. It's not really very far. So I was like, oh, I see. And, you know, then it made sense that, okay, so it is another cafe. And I walked up to that place. Now, I'll tell you, Sunset Cafe is cute. It's more well-lit, a little bit more modern. You know, it's not a little tiny shed-type place like the Sundowner, right? It's more modern. It looked like it had better tables and up and down and stuff. But it also had loud music. It had a big crowd. It had lots of dogs. Cute. Dogs are nice to see, you know, from afar. But when you want to have a quiet, peaceful time, definitely that's not the place. So even though that was the popular place, I walked away from there. You know, I just went there, looked around, explored, smiled, spoke to the owner, asked him what vegan options he had, and then just walked away from there and came right back to Sundowner Cafe, sat there, ordered some nice hot noodles, ate them. And I told that guy also, I said, you know, that place is nice, but it's too noisy and crowded. I like your place better. The views are nicer and I do enjoy this piece. He had very soft, old Hindi music playing and stuff, and, you know, some mantras and stuff also once in a while. It was very nice. So the point is, there are these two places. One is a lot more popular and everybody's going there. And there's this other place which is really not even well known. But to me, the not so popular place was the one that appealed to me more because it was quiet and peaceful and it was nice. It was really lovely and cozy to sit there. I didn't feel out of place. I didn't feel like I'm crashing somebody else's party when I was there. So I went to the place run by the very, very local guy, you know, and I enjoyed that. And I did not feel like I missed out on anything just because I didn't spend time at the Sunset Cafe, which so many people had spoken to me about until that point. So yeah, you know, you don't have to do the popular things. You do the very local things. You do the things that appeal to you. That makes your trip feel richer and more satisfying. It doesn't make it feel like one checklist that, okay, I did this, I got this done, I visited this place. It's not that. It's not a flat checklist. Instead, you get to explore a place in more depth, understand local culture. I had a chat with the Sundowner Cafe guy and he was telling me a little bit about, you know, his life and the place and stuff. So it was so nice, you know, the whole experience was lovely. And then I headed back on my own and came back. That was such a beautiful way to end my trip. Then I just came back, my path going downwards also. I was a little scared to take the same path, but that guy encouraged me. He said, no, you can do it. Just do the longer path. It takes like 3 times the amount of time and all. So I just came down, and coming down was a lot easier because I knew where I was headed versus not knowing where I was going. I was being careful, of course, very, very careful so that I don't slip and stuff. And then with a lot of breaks, I came down and I went rushing downstairs to the cafe instead of even going to my room, which was on the way. I went straight to the cafe and my friends were there. Well, new friends. I just sat down and told them all about my adventure at Gallu. It was really so much fun. My final lesson is that wherever you go, if you are open, you can find family. You can find like-minded people. You can find friendships. You can find wonderful company. You can make sure that you feel at home. You can find the kind of situations that will make you feel at home. So then no solo trip that you go on will feel lonely. You know, you don't need to be with somebody. You just go there and you will find other people who you would love to spend time with. So yeah, this is all that I can think of right now. I know there were many more lessons, many more things that I learned as a part of this trip, but this episode is getting really long, so I'll stop here. I do hope you enjoyed listening to all these stories, to these experiences from Dharamkot, Himachal Pradesh. And if you ever do visit, get in touch with me. I'd be happy to recommend a few more places to you, few more things that you can do. And if you've already been there, then write into me and let me know what your experience was like. I would love to hear about it. All right. Thank you for listening. Talk to you again next week. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Feel Good Factor. I'm Susmita Veganosaurus and I'm looking forward to talking to you again very soon. Bye!